Welcome to the Pathways to Heart podcast series presented by the Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning at Sophia University. Sophia University is located in California and offers students a unique educational experience rooted in transformative, transpersonal education. The Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning supports transformative education by creating engaged leaders and learners through resources, trainings, and events. This podcast series focuses on critical emerging issues in our communities. Today's podcast is a discussion with Dr. Ginger Charles on spiritual understandings and approaches to policing, interviewed by host Adam Neal. Ginger Charles is the Executive Director of the Institute for Spirituality and Policing. She served for 27 years as a police sergeant in Colorado. In 2005, Dr. Charles received her doctorate from Saybrook University in health psychology, focusing on health risk factors in the police community, specifically in the area of health and spirituality.
So welcome, Dr. Ginger Charles, and thank you so much for agreeing to be interviewed. It is such an honor to connect with you today.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. So let's kind of go right into it. I'm wondering, so what seems to you to be the most integral or even the most urgent in forging police community, given today's cultural climate and what's been going on?
So really good, loaded first question. I think one of the things, I was just recently interviewed about one of the laws that just passed for policing, for improving policing. And one of the aspects of that law was to create a four-year degree for police applicants, a modern policing degree. In that degree, they want history and ethnic studies and psychology, sociology. So they really want a well-rounded person. My thought around that is that that's a great first step for a new person. The trouble with that is that you can have these wonderful 21-year-old individuals that are educated go into a culture that's damaged. And if they're not prepared, if they're not resilient, they will easily be consumed by that culture within a matter of weeks. And so the larger issue is, what are we doing with law enforcement leadership? And the big issue is accountability. Like, how are we being accountable to who we are and how we're affecting others within the organization? Because if we can't do that, then those people create dis-ease for those inside the culture, who then in turn go out into the community and are feeling in crisis, meeting a community in crisis. And so I think I would stick with accountability.
Okay. Yeah. And that idea of the life experience going along with what we're able to be held accountable for, and on that kind of on a multidimensional level to have that awareness, that sounds so important.
Yeah. Yes.
So was there anything in particular that inspired you to begin exploring the transpersonal and potentially spiritual aspects of policing?
Well, hopefully you like stories, because this is a story.
I do.
I was working on my doctorate at the time. I had been in law enforcement about 14 years at the time. So I was taking graduate courses, and I was just burning through the program, doing really, really well, looking at health risk factors and how they influence us on our morbidity and mortality. And somehow during that time, my dissertation chair just disappeared. He was kind of the lead of this whole new kind of research. And I was in Colorado and I ended up going to California. And I wandered around to all the professors. I felt like that little book, Are You My Mother, with the little bird that wanders around. And I would ask a professor and I would say, would you work with me? And that professor would go, no, I'm not going to work with you. Because working with a cop at that time in psychology was a bit out there. They didn't want to do that. I think they thought I was going to hit them or something. I don't know. But anyway, I had written a paper for one of the professors on a spiritual inquiry of an experience that I had. And so he was the last professor that I got to. And I said, will you work with me? And he said, I will work with you, but you must take a spiritual approach. And I, at the time, I was like, okay, I don't care. I'll do it. And then I got back to Colorado and I very quickly realized that there was nothing. It was an echo chamber. There was nothing in law enforcement about spirituality and policing. And so the story that I experienced, I was on patrol one day and we had a call of a fight in progress at a location that I was literally like two or three blocks from. And this was an area where they did not like police officers. So I head to the area and for some strange reason, I was the only police officer on that side of the city. The rest of my police officers were across the city miles away. So I pull into the driveway and just as I get into the driveway of this location, it's toned out, and that tone out will certainly set your, you know, your autonomic nervous system on fire. It's just like this whoop, whoop. And what it means is that this is a deadly force encounter. So as I pull into the driveway, there's no going back now because, you know, it's a deadly force encounter. And I see a big SUV or a sports utility vehicle. Mm-hmm. And on the vehicle, on the side rails of the vehicle, there are four or five people pounding on people inside the vehicle. So I park my patrol car and I open my car. And on this left side of me is this big apartment complex where they don't like police officers. So I'm by myself and I'm in an area that's not police friendly. And I'm with a vehicle with four or five people beating on people on the inside. And I don't know who has a knife. So I have my gun out. And I'm pointing my gun at them and I'm ordering them all out of the car. And I thought it was like the Guinness Book of World Record. There were just people pouring out of that car. So I ended up getting five to kneel down with their hands in the air. And they complied with me to get down on the ground. And I had one guy run away from the vehicle around the apartment complex. So he's out of my field of vision. I don't know where he's at. And that's a very dangerous situation. In front of me, I have two more guys come out and they're approaching me. You have a clock from the 10 and the 2 position. So they're angling in at me on the patrol car and then five in front of me. So I literally have seven at gunpoint. And they're coming closer and they're screaming at me and cussing. And I'm recognizing that, you know, certainly this is a stressful situation, but I'm not afraid. So I'm pointing my gun at each of them and yelling at the commands at them. And in my head, I'm thinking, you know, when is it that I'm going to shoot? What step are they going to have to take before I end up shooting? And in my mind's eye, I literally can see myself, did not happen, but I could see myself shooting the one on the left. I would hit him twice in the chest and once in the head. I could see him fall down dead. The bullets exit his body and enter the dirt. So in my world, that is a good shoot. I haven't injured anybody else. Turn to the one on the right. I end up shooting him as well. He falls down. I see the bullets exit. End of story. As that's happening, I'm still yelling commands. The people on the ground are yelling at the two coming at me saying, stop, she's going to kill you. Stop. And they're yelling, she's not going to kill me. And I'm like, I'm going to kill you. In the meantime, it's like I was enveloped in this bubble with these individuals. There's like this big bubble. And this blackboard rolls across my mind's eye. And as I'm yelling commands, I can see through the blackboard. I'm yelling commands. I'm hearing everything that's going on. I'm noticing my emotions. I see in script writing the word being written, preclusion. And so if you don't know what that word means, it means, have you exhausted every level of force prior to the use of deadly force? Mm-hmm. So just that word. And as I'm yelling commands, reading the word, hearing everything, I pull my pepper spray from my duty belt and put it on the butt of my gun. And the two guys drop and yell, don't effing mace me, don't effing mace me. Hmm. And I'm stunned. I have the biggest, what I call dumbass look on my face because I'm like, I was ready to kill these two. And all it was just mace. Just at that time, the rest of the police officers showed up and that bubble burst. And we were back to our roles of cop and robber. So what I realized was we had this moment in this bubble where eight of us could actually get to the highest level of good for all of us. So even though we were at this cop and criminal role, we were working together in this bubble to come with, to the best conclusion. And so it changed the way I policed forever, because I thought, you know, just that moment, and it literally took 3 minutes from the time the call was dispatched to me, I drove there and this whole thing ended. So within 3 minutes, my brain was able to work through that because I was open to the experience and allowed these others to have this effect. And it ended in the highest way possible. So at the end of the call, I rest those two and my sergeant's there and he's asking me, you know, what happened? I tell him. And the one kid walked over, one of the ones that was challenging me, drunk, just drunk, like a juvenile, drunk. And there was no weapon. And he said, "Thanks for not killing me." And I said, "You're welcome." And I meant it. And I didn't tell anyone about this experience until I wrote about it for my dissertation, one of my courses in my dissertation. So that moment where I realized that the other, you know, looking at all of the ability of our brain to think outside and to absorb other sources of information was a big change for me. And I thought, if I had it, there are plenty of law enforcement officers that have had this too.
Yes, what an amazing story, and that it brings together so many different layers of experience, and from a transpersonal standpoint, layers of awareness and forms of presence, and that you kind of acted as witness to your own experience as it's happening. And from a spiritual standpoint, sounds like there were transformative aspects for you that changed the way that you perceived your work. So wonderful. And thank you so much for sharing. It's all the details that way. Yeah,
absolutely.
Wow. So kind of to go along with this idea of how it changed your approach to policing and what it helped you cultivate that way, I'm wondering which of these transpersonal or spiritual assets or qualities or even resources do you feel are the most prevalent among the law enforcement providers that you've connected with? So what do they seem to have as far as these qualities?
So obviously, I continued in this research using this experience and thinking, well, how would I find this information out? And obviously it was a very small pilot study across the United States, interviewing people qualitatively about their spiritual practice, how do they work within a field that is just full of human destructiveness and suffering? What are their coping mechanisms? And so I asked them 8 basic questions, and then I used probing questions in order to get further clarification. And what I found in that very first study was really 3 main themes, and I'll kind of blend them in here. The main one was they all had some type of spiritual practice of some kind, whether it was meditation or quietness through self-reflection, focusing their energy, many different types of meditation, and then also prayer. And so that was one. The other one was recognizing the humanness of the individual that's in front of you. So there was never this disregard of us versus, there was never an us versus them. They always were very aware that that's a human being in front of me that's struggling, even if it's a criminal. And then the final thing was, is that they had coping mechanisms to deal with the human destructiveness and suffering that was outside of the police culture. So again, other sources where they connected with folks outside the profession, whether they, they could have gotten into music and been musicians, anything to be creative outside of that culture. So those were the 3. And that has continued because, you know, I continue researching, and on two different continents now, we've interviewed probably about 200 police officers, from atheists through pagans, Mormon, Baptist, a Baptist, Mormon. He had like three different ones that he blended, and I thought, well, that's really interesting. So anyway, they're just no religion, just spirituality. It's all the same. It's really the same themes that come up. So,
okay. Yeah. And so as far as spiritual aspects or qualities of individuals that you feel are most needed or most called for right now, what do you feel like comes to mind around that?
So there's a, in recognizing, I may have to answer that in kind of three parts. So that they're very clear on recognizing that they are not like the savior. They are more like a tool that is in the criminal justice profession. So because of that, then there's no ego attached to I must pass judgment. It is rather I'm a tool toward them heading for an accountability or consequence. So once that ego is removed, then they get much clearer on the fact that that is a human being in front of me that is redeemable and is in a bad situation. And certainly I could be in that situation. So then that builds resiliency because, you know, as you're in this profession, you're seeing, you know, people on their worst day. Well, you know, how does that affect you? Because I've seen hundreds of deaths and very tragic scenes and certainly have cried on duty. So what helps you be resilient? Well, it's the ability to recognize that, you know, there's hope out there, that there are moments that you